I'm now pleased to introduce Dr. Paul Haru, an associate professor in the Department of Epidemiology, Biostatistics, and Occupational Health at McGill University School of Medicine, Canada, where he is the current Occupational Health Program Director. Dr. Haru is a scientist with experience in physics, engineering, and health sciences. The title of Dr. Haru's talk is Health Perturbations of Wi-Fi Radiation in Schools and Homes. He will speak about the pulse nature of Wi-Fi radiation and the two main impacts presently recognized in children, namely cancer and effects on the nervous system. He will also discuss the numerous observations on memory, behavior, and attention that have been made. Welcome, Dr. Haru.
Thank you very much. So Dr. Maret referred to my research on essentially magnetic fields in your environment being a more deleterious agent than oxygen, but actually I will not speak about this, essentially because I was asked to speak about other things, and I will stick to what I was asked to do. So I talk about irradiation from Wi-Fi in schools and the possible consequences that this might have, as well as to why the Federal Communications Commission, this is your commission, does not protect you. How all of this happened? Well, the second question is actually easier to understand. So, why the FCC does not protect you? Why could that be? Isn't that their function? But actually, it's a spectrum allocation agency. They don't have any health specialists. And it all has to do with this. You might recognize this as an atomic bomb. And to understand how we got to where we are today, you have to have the perspective of history. Some will tell you that the present limits for electromagnetic radiation are based on heat. But actually, heat is a placeholder for war. At the time that the limits were set, the Cold War was in play. The Soviets had just launched Sputnik and mentioned of health effects of electromagnetic radiation in your country was widely viewed as anti-patriotic in view of the desire to prevail over the Soviets. The motives were very, very important. War critically depends on radar and communications. You don't lose war because your army has too many cancers. You lose wars for other reasons. If you don't believe that this is true, I submit to you this slide. This is the committee that set the ball rolling for industry in 1966. The standard was decided by a committee of 15 people. 10 were from the armed services, one from the Petroleum Institute, one from Space Administration, one from General Dynamics, who makes fighters, one from the US Treasury, and one from the US Public Health Service, probably very carefully chosen. So this bias is maintained until today in the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, which is a self-appointed body in Germany that manages itself, and the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. So the real philosophical question is, are the exposures that are appropriate for a fighter pilot in his F-16 who intuitively accepts risk, he is in the military, appropriate for your daughter in school, in the first grade, under a Wi-Fi router? And at the time, this wasn't a question, because in 1966, these situations did not exist. The next question is, if the military could, for political and war reasons, obtain a very high standard so as not to impair their function. Could industry perhaps get the same deal? Is not industry as important as war? What do you say? Economic development is very, very important, isn't it? So what place do we want to give to this as compared to health? So at the top, you see here a logo from the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. And they have a dream of unlimited applications for telecommunications because they see this as a tremendous service to humanity. Their dream is based on the proliferation of semiconductors and radio frequency devices. They have no specific dreams for humans, but they have specific dreams for their own industry. They impose their own ideas about health impacts, specifically the thermal ideas. And as far as the health impacts, it's a subject that they did not really understand or care very much to understand. You have to understand that from within industry, they are totally devoted to their craft. And things outside are beyond what they can afford to be preoccupied with. And you see the curve here that shows below that recently, a few years ago, we were spending 202 hours and 51 minutes on cell phones. So this is not 1966 anymore. Due to evolution in technology, we have widespread, considerably exposure to radio frequencies. In 1966, it was mostly a military exposure. Now it's your exposure. So, essentially what happened over time is that, yes, industry felt, well, the military got this deal. Can we get the same deal? And from the military to the American National Standards Institute, which is an organization of engineering firms, to the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, to the Federal Communications Commission, the standard for exposure originating in the military was transmitted almost unchanged. So, what can we make of this? This is not an old story. This is a new story, sorry. It is a very, very old one. You know that guy? He is the priest of capitalism, the one who determined that let industry go and let industry flourish. It will be best for all of us. And we know that we need a flourishing industry. But do we need to leave industry to do whatever it wants? If you see at the top there, you'll see that industry wants to widen the market. And that industry is focused on itself. That's what we, as shareholders, ask them to do. So they're just doing what is expected of them. But it comes from an order of men whose interests are not exactly the same as those of the population. They aim to sell products. So, merchants and the engineering community are not busy defending your health in spite of their public relations, comments. They are completely focused on expanding their business. And Adam Smith told us, never let the merchants make the rules. But I would call the IEEE and the FCC the merchants in this case. We've been through things like that before, and apparently we don't learn very, very well from this situation. So, the first on the left here is a Bobby in London. Well, for a long time, there were very few smokestacks in our environment, so dilution of industrial contaminants was great. So, there was no impact on us. But in 1952, there was the killer fog in London where 12,000 people died within 4 days. And that awakened people to the idea that perhaps all of this trash in our air is not very good for us. And since then, we have expanded on this knowledge to know that, yes, it is very, very bad for us to broadcast trash in our air. Okay, you've heard about lead. Well, General Motors policy in 1921 of supporting the inclusion of tetraethyl lead in gasoline instead of ethanol. As a result, 15 million of your children lost about 10 IQ points. Will this corporation ever be held accountable for this? No. At that point, they must have known. They knew that this was going to happen, but ethanol was not patentable. The victims are your children. So, should we have introduced ethanol in 1921? I believe so, and I believe that General Motors would still be flourishing right now had it done so. I have a GM car. I love it. There's more than one way to develop things. So these children have permanent losses in IQ. They have hyperactivity, behavior, and learning problems that will not go away ever. So many substances have heavy public health impacts that rarely show acute evidence of toxicity at low levels. Otherwise, they would be classified as poisons. Just like global warming, global microwaving, which is about to happen to you, and obligatory global microwaving, because it's going to be in front of your house, is happening. So, exposure to electromagnetic radiation of all sorts have been happening over the last 100 years. And with the pulse electromagnetic radiation that you've had since the second generation of cell phones, the effects on you have increased. However, I would say that they have been present since about 1900. And so we are dealing with a real problem that in 1920, did not have the means to acknowledge, but that we can measure now. Turning back to the second question, Wi-Fi in schools, libraries, and our homes, where do our children go to be safe? So, in classrooms, in libraries, in administrative offices, isn't it convenient to install a router and to get Wi-Fi? And like any marketed device, wireless has been promoted as the wondrous new tool of education. It will make your kids smarter, faster, with less cost. But this was not demonstrated because this was introduced. It was accepted because you all like to have new Tide and something new to be purchased. We are programmed by our television, by publicity, to accept innovation as positive without having it, I would say, vetted beforehand. So, what is the situation in schools? Well, all of these locations can be potentially filled with electromagnetic radiation. And in fact, the radiation in schools can be so strong that in some cases it will approach the FCC thermal limit. Why is this? Well, this is taken from the website of a company who promotes installations in schools, and what they say is that, well, the solution must support relatively high numbers of connections, typically 30 computers in a classroom, communicating, say, with one Wi-Fi router. And in addition, if you want to use these XO laptops, they have a collaboration capability with their little ears that you see there, where they will not only communicate with the router, they will communicate with each other. And they have a capacity for as many as 99 others to communicate with. So it's not really a surprise that And also, it is suggested here that if this isn't enough for your class or fast enough, we can put more routers in a single class. So I have not measured this personally, but some people have, and they say the FCC limit is practically reached. And this is the thermal limit that says that essentially heating is a problem, not to speak of all the other problems. So, under these circumstances, what can we make of Wi-Fi in schools? For children, it is clear to me that if radiation is a risk, and if you think of these extreme configurations, you can't accept to have it. You would wire all schools. But I am a university professor. I teach graduate students. So what do I think of this situation, Wi-Fi in schools personally? In my class, we have Wi-Fi. So I go in front of an audience, and they all have computers. I can no longer be certain of their attention. Classrooms were meant to keep people together on a single subject that was brought to them by a teacher. I thought that was the case. I don't teach students in an amusement park, but having Wi-Fi in class makes this entirely possible. This is the first effect that is deleterious. I spend most of my time wondering whether I'm entertaining enough for the students in front of me. Secondly, the internet in class, it does one thing that's very critical. It cheapens knowledge because you can input a few words and you've got information immediately. So what this does is that, since there is no problem with accessing information, why do I need to acquire it? So internet makes it easier for students to look smart, but it makes it harder for them to be smart. And I think that's very important. So what is the health evidence that this radiation actually does something to these kids? Well, it's time of exposure multiplied by the intensity of the exposure multiplied by the susceptibility to damage. So one question is, are children more susceptible than adults? Maybe it's the case. Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2013 petitioned the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, and the Food and Drug Administration to reassess the safety of electromagnetic radiation, and they have refused openly to do so because they think everything is fine. Everything is fine for who is the question. So Dr. Moret has already shown something like this, that an adult has this kind of penetration, a 10-year-old child has this, and a 5-year-old child has that in terms of radiation exposure. So the criteria that are based on heat, this is an assessment of a cell phone here and the heat, and this is an assessment of penetration of albumin in the brain. Penetration of albumin in the brain is a symptom of brain pathology. The pattern of this and the pattern of this, you see here these dots, this is the control, this is the exposed. Dots show penetration of albumin. Here, this is the control, again, dots that show penetration of albumin. The two patterns are entirely different. So what this says is that essentially, engineering studies cannot predict the risk to students. Thermal estimations cannot reach biological reality. And why are we worried about albumin going into the brains of students? It's because albumin, this huge molecule, can be a carrier for all of these toxicants. If your child has been exposed to these things at the same time as radiation, this stuff, arsenic, lead, benzene, will all go into their brains. Electrosensitive people, you know there are some in your community, but there's relatively few of them. Why would we care? It's their problem. They are the ones that are sick, aren't they? This is a young girl in Oregon who survived because she changed school after Dr. Paul Dart in Oregon found out that she was electrosensitive, and moving to a school without Wi-Fi solved her problem entirely. So There's lots of studies on the effects of microwave radiation that are very, very convincing on learning and memory in the rat and changes in the hippocampus, the site of memory, oxidative stress, apoptosis, and energy metabolism. With 1 minute remaining, I will fly through these things. You see, maturation of neural cells is abnormal. You see, apoptosis, which means destruction of cells in the nervous system, is enhanced. Changes in the structure of the memory centers of the brain are there. And if that weren't enough, epidemiological studies say that it gives you headaches. Oh my God. So all the signs are there. We have a population of people who can't tolerate this radiation. It gives you headaches. And we have plenty of studies showing that it's deleterious. My colleague Anthony Miller is really worried that between 0 and 4 years old to 2010, we have an increase annually in tumors of the central nervous system and malignant brain tumors. So it's going up in your children. And altered gray matter volume and white matter integrity in cell phones. Okay, I'm going to go to my conclusion. This is the class that represents a bunch of students. You see they're in the wireless school, but I want to represent this as a group of studies. Now, one of these students is electrosensitive. One study says that this student has to go elsewhere to another school. These three students, they have memory impairment. They don't learn as well. Who will know about this? What industry is saying is that as long as all the studies don't concur to measure the same things, we shouldn't act. In other words, let's wait till they're all electrosensitive, all dumber, and maybe then we will have indexes that will detect this effect and will do something about it. And science is clear. There is no doubt about the deleterious effect of this radiation. It is being stopped by the foothold that industry has gained on regulation. Thank you.